content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Kenny Park Yee for the North Carolina Reading Service. And this is the February 2023 edition of Education Today. We'll get started with an article from Education Week titled, "Want to Recruit Male Teachers of Color? Look to this New York City Leader," by Allison Klein and Mark Walsh, posted February 6th, 2023. In 2015, New York City's then-mayor, Bill de Blasio, set a lofty goal to make the city's teaching corps better reflect its students, put an additional 1,000 men of color on track to become public school teachers in the city by 2018. The nation's largest school district sailed past that target a year early and kept right on going. Despite the success, Shamir Stevens, a key player in the effort, couldn't help thinking of the prospective teachers drawn in by the district's $2 million ad campaign, only to be turned away. Too many of them got tripped up by a grade point average requirement or the cost of graduate school. "We said to ourselves, what can we do for that population of men of color?" said Stevens, who served first as a program manager in the recruitment initiative dubbed NYC Men Teach, then beginning in 2018 as its leader and the senior director of diversity recruitment for the roughly 900,000 student district. Now the pipeline he's helped build to bring men of color into the teaching force stretches all the way back to high schoolers, continues with college students, and includes on-ramps for those already working as paraprofessionals and in similar positions throughout the city's schools. "I always get asked, how do you create a vibrant, diverse, inclusive pathway for people to come into the teaching profession? And my biggest takeaway is, start early," Stevens said. Subsection called, "Unlike Anyone I'd Ever Seen Before." In part thanks to Stevens' work, the district has quadrupled its ambitious initial goal, adding 4,000 men of color to its teaching ranks over the past 8 years. The move has brought the share of male teachers of color from 8.5% in 2015 to 15% last year. That's still not reflective of a student population in which 51% of children are male, and roughly 4 in 5 students are Hispanic, Black, or Asian. Still, far more New York City students will likely be taught by a man of color than students in other districts around the country. Black men make up just 2% of the nation's teaching force. "The almost doubling of the proportion of male teachers of color is, quote, pretty remarkable, though we still have a lot of progress to go," said Amy Way, the executive director of the Office of Teacher Recruitment and Quality for the New York City System, and Stevens' boss. Stevens, she added, has been a critical leader in driving that progress. "Having teachers who look like them can positively reverberate for students of color for decades," studies show. For instance, if a low-income Black student has just one Black teacher in elementary school, that student is significantly more likely to graduate high school and consider attending college, a 2017 Johns Hopkins University study found. Stevens has all the data at the tip of his tongue, but he didn't need to read a study to know how important it is for young men of color to look at their teachers and see possibilities for themselves. Stevens, who is Black, grew up in the Bronx, where he watched his mother, a Head Start teacher, spend her own money on supplies for her classroom. He attended private Catholic schools, where he didn't have a male teacher of color until his 8th grade homeroom teacher, Mr. Regan. "Mr. Regan was just unlike anyone I'd ever seen before, from the way he dressed to the way he spoke to how smart he was," Stevens said. "That just really, really impacted me." The following year, Eduardo Calderone, another man of color who worked in an after-school program Stevens attended, made an even bigger impression. Stevens wasn't the kind of kid who got into trouble, but he also didn't have much direction. Calderone called him on it, Stevens said. "I'll never forget, he asked me, 'What do you want to do with your life?'" Stevens said, and I was like, "Play basketball, I don't know." And he was like, "You need to figure that out, because if not, you're going to run the risk of ending up as a statistic." In his early teens, Stephen didn't understand what that phrase meant exactly, but he grasped the message behind it when Calderone brought him along to one of his graduate classes at Fordham University. Stevens had never been on the campus, just a short distance from his home. "I sat through the class," he remembered. "Boom, it blew me away. The guy changed the trajectory of my life," Stevens said, "by opening him up to the possibilities of college and advanced study." Stevens ultimately enrolled in and graduated from Fordham with a degree in English literature. Subsection called Entry Points from High School and Beyond. Inspired in part by his mother's example, Stevens has dedicated his career to working with or on behalf of children, first as a director of operations at the KIPP Charter Network, then with a program that placed social workers in schools before joining NYC Men Teach. After the initial satisfaction of reaching the city's first goal, NYC Men Teach's original director moved on, recommending Stevens be elevated to her position. And we'll have to cut that article short for time. The next article comes from the New York Times, and it's titled, "The Road to a Supreme Court Clerkship Starts at Three Ivy League Colleges." The chances of obtaining a coveted clerkship, a new study found, increase sharply with undergraduate degrees from Harvard, Yale, or Princeton. By Adam Liptak, posted February 6, 2023. When Ted Cruz attended Harvard Law School, he liked to study with people who had undergraduate degrees from Harvard, Yale, or Princeton. He said he didn't want anybody from minor Ivies like Penn or Brown, one of his law school roommates told GQ. That may strike you as slicing the bologna of elitism awfully thin, but a new study has found that Supreme Court justices do much the same thing in selecting their law clerks. It is not news that the justices favor a handful of law schools in doling out clerkships, a glittering credential that all but guarantees success in a profession obsessed with status markers. But the study adds another factor. To get a clerkship, it really helps to have gone to college at Harvard, Yale, or Princeton. Albert Yoon, a law professor at the University of Toronto and one of the study's authors, said the finding was disturbing. "We don't really live in a meritocracy," he said. "The Supreme Court is guilty of perpetuating some of the worst pathologies in American society." Each justice typically hires four law clerks per term. The study, which collected data on the 1,426 former clerks in the 40-year period ending in 2020, found that more than two-thirds of them attended just five law schools: Harvard, Yale, Stanford, Columbia, and the University of Chicago. Chief Justice John G. Roberts, Jr., for instance, chose 58 clerks in the period covered by the study, 37 of them from Harvard or Yale. You might think that doing well at one of those law schools and then obtaining a prestigious clerkship with a federal appeals court judge would check the necessary boxes. But it turns out that undergraduate degrees seem to matter too. Going to college at Harvard, Yale, or Princeton, even after controlling for law school grades, gave applicants a significant boost, the study found. Mr. Cruz, now a senator from Texas, may be a case in point. He graduated with honors from Harvard Law School and served as a law clerk to Judge J. Michael Luttig before going on to clerk for Chief Justice William H. Rehnquist. And Mr. Cruz went to college at Princeton. The study, conducted by Professor Yoon, Tracy E. George of Vanderbilt University, and Meetu Gulati of the University of Virginia, focused on Harvard Law School. It has long produced the most Supreme Court law clerks, partly because of its prestige and partly because it is much larger than some of its rivals. A larger proportion of Yale Law School graduates have served as Supreme Court clerks. The study, which considered 22,475 Harvard Law graduates, took account of three data points: where they went to college, whether they qualified for academic honors in law school, graduating cum laude, magna cum laude, or summa cum laude, and whether they obtained a Supreme Court clerkship. About half of the graduates had attended one of 22 selective undergraduate institutions, and more than a fifth of the graduates had gone to college at Harvard, Yale, or Princeton. Both of these groups graduated with honors from Harvard Law at above average rates. But here's the key point. Even controlling for achievement in law school as measured by academic honors, members of the two groups were more likely than their peers to obtain Supreme Court clerkships. And most of the difference could be traced to students who had gone to college at Harvard, Yale, or Princeton. They were three times as likely to get clerkships as those who had gone to the other 19 undergraduate institutions when graduating with cum laude honors, and 50% more likely when graduating with magna cum laude honors. Both differences were statistically significant. Summa cum laude honors were very rare and very often led to clerkships, regardless of undergraduate institution. The bottom line, Professor George said, is that the road to a Supreme Court clerkship starts in college. Elite law school degrees don't repair or overcome a lower status undergraduate degree, she said. You can't scrub your undergraduate degree with a law degree. Professor Gulati said, there is something disturbing about this given that Supreme Court clerkships are government jobs, and clerical ones at that. The process seems highly biased toward elite private schools, he said. The problem, Professor Yoon said, was not with the young lawyers who made the cut. The people who get Supreme Court clerkships are great, he said, but there are a lot of great people who don't get it. The justices themselves are products of elite educations. 8 of them attended law school at Harvard or Yale, and 6 of them have undergraduate degrees from Harvard, Yale, or Princeton, and 6 of them had themselves served as law clerks at the Supreme Court. There can be a clubby quality to the justices' remarks about the schools they attended. Chief Justice Roberts, who has 2 Harvard degrees, was asked in 2009 whether Supreme Court justices could relate to ordinary folks. The Chief Justice said he wanted to dispel a myth. Not all justices went to elite institutions, he said. Some of them went to Yale. The next article comes from USA Today, and it's titled, Teacher Salaries Become a Bipartisan Cause, Low Pay a Major Crisis in Education, by Aaliyah Wong, published February 13, 2023. Having met and fallen in love through their careers as special education teachers, Natalia Sandoval and her husband tried to make it work as long as they could. But after a while, they could no longer get by on 2 teacher salaries while raising 2 sons in Hawaii, not to mention paying back the student loan debt they'd accumulated so they could train to work with students with disabilities. Shortly before the pandemic, Sandoval's husband, Joseph, traded in the career he loved for one that would keep their family afloat, as a worker on the docks. It helps pay the bills and may even allow them to buy a house one day, but it's hardly as rewarding, said Sandoval, who knew from an early age growing up on Oahu that she wanted to be a teacher, specifically in special education. I stay because I really enjoy working with the kids, and I like supporting the families more than anything because it's a very difficult world to navigate, Sandoval said. But veteran teachers like her and Joseph are often forced to decide whether the job is worth the sacrifices. We're just surviving, not thriving. Teacher pay is again in the news, with both Democratic President Joe Biden and Republican Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders vowing to raise educators' salaries in their addresses to the nation last Tuesday night. Lawmakers in a number of states, both blue and red, have introduced or passed legislation boosting educators' salaries over the past year or so. A bill before the U.S. House would incentivize states to raise teacher pay, setting a minimum salary of $60,000. And Senator Bernie Sanders, the new chair of the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, will soon introduce similar legislation. Raising teacher pay has become an issue of rare bipartisan consensus, suggested Sanders, who shared initial details of his plan exclusively with USA Today ahead of a teacher town hall he is hosting with the country's largest teachers' unions Monday evening. Against that backdrop, Sanders says the issue will be one of his top priorities. We're in the midst of a major crisis in education, and if we are going to have the best educational system in the world, which we should have, which we must have, we're going to have to very much change our attitude toward teachers, Sanders said. Subsection, how much do teachers make? Nationally, the average starting salary for a teacher is less than $42,000, while teachers of all levels of experience make about $61,000. Those numbers mask significant variation from state to state, however. See this breakdown from the NEA to see what teacher salaries look like in your state. This then links out to a chart. And just for reference, in North Carolina, the starting salary is $37,127. The top bachelor's amount is $55,160. A starting master's salary is $40,839. And a top master's is $60,675. The top salary in North Carolina is $63,359. In addition, there are lots of prerequisites to becoming a teacher, including a bachelor's and often master's degree, student teaching experience, and an exam-based license. Yet compared with similar college-educated workers, teachers make less than 77 cents on the dollar. This teacher pay penalty has grown over the decades, according to the left-leaning Economic Policy Institute, hitting a new high in 2021. In 1996, teachers made close to 92 cents on the dollar. Subsection Bernie Sanders, $60,000 minimum needed to solve teacher shortages. If our goal is the best educational system in the world, if our goal is to be able to attract the best and the brightest young people into education, we're going to have to substantially raise our teacher salary, Sanders said, pointing to shortages of teachers ravaging some parts of the country. In my view, that must be at least a $60,000 a year salary. Sanders's bill would triple federal funding through estate tax increases targeting the wealthiest Americans. It would pump roughly $450 billion total in new mandatory federal funding into every district, starting with $40 billion in the 2024 fiscal year. Districts would then have to use that money at least in part to raise teachers' base pay. A bill recently reintroduced in the House by Democrats would, through grants, incentivize states and districts to similarly increase teachers' base salary to $60,000. President Biden said during the State of the Union address, "Let's give public school teachers a raise." Republicans and Democrats gave a rousing applause because it is long overdue, said Florida Representative Frederica Wilson, a co-sponsor of the bill, in a statement. Experts stress better compensation is just part of the solution. "We absolutely need to raise teacher salaries, but that alone is not enough," said Takiya Brownie of the New Teacher Project. "We have to also address the other pieces that go with it, like working conditions, the culture, the way we support teachers." Subsection, working extra hours, jobs to pay off student loans. Sandoval has received some pay bumps, including a temporary $10,000 a year bonus for Hawaii special education teachers designed to alleviate shortages in that and other hard-to-staff areas. She also has after-school gigs as a tutor, and in the past has worked in administrative roles. Nearly one in five teachers have a job outside the school system, according to recent federal survey data. That's on top of spending 52 hours weekly in their teaching position, fewer than half of which they spent actually teaching. If it weren't for that supplemental income, teachers like Sandoval say it'd be difficult to pay their bills and pay off student debt. Nearly half of educators took out student loans to pay for college, according to data from the National Education Association, and owe $58,700 on average. Very few educators have had their loans forgiven through a federal program for people who work in public service. And we'll have to cut that article short for time. The next article comes from NBC News, and it's titled, "College Board Says It Erred in Not Quickly Pushing Back on, Quote, Slander by Florida Over AP History Course." The company said its commitment to the African American Studies course is, quote, unwavering. Posted February 13, 2023, by Curtis Bunn. The College Board said it made an error in not, quote, immediately denouncing the Florida Department of Education's slander of its African American Studies course after the department deemed that the advanced high school course, quote, lacks educational value. "Our failure to raise our voice betrayed black scholars everywhere and those who have long toiled to build this remarkable field," the company said in an extensive statement released Sunday to, quote, "clear the air and set the record straight." It called attacks on black scholars repulsive and said they must stop. This controversy began on January 12th when the Florida Department of Education sent a letter to the College Board saying the course, quote, could not be approved as written. The content of this course is inexplicably contrary to Florida law and significantly lacks educational value, the department said. On February 1st, to open Black History Month, the College Board published its final course framework, but it was devoid of critical race theory, intersectionality, and other topics Florida had objected to. The board said the changes were not in response to Florida's remarks, but rather edits that had been made before Florida expressed its concerns. Our commitment to AP African American Studies is unwavering, the College Board's statement begins. This will be the most rigorous, cohesive immersion that high school students have ever had in this discipline. Many more students than ever before will go on to deepen their knowledge in African American Studies programs in college. Governor Ron DeSantis, a Republican, has led the charge over the last 2 years, also advocating against the teaching of critical race theory while also passing legislation that prevents teaching that suggests a race is oppressed or privileged. DeSantis seemed unfazed by the College Board's most recent statement. Our Department of Education looked at that and said, in Florida, we do education, not indoctrination, and so that runs afoul of our standards, he said at a news conference on Monday. We were just the only ones that had the backbone to stand up and do it, because they call you names and they demagogue you when you do it. But look, I'm so sick of people not doing what's right because they're worried that people are going to call them names. We're doing what's right here. Previously, DeSantis said the course was rejected because its framework was on the wrong side of the line for Florida standards. We believe in teaching kids facts and how to think, but we don't believe they should have an agenda imposed on them. When you try to use Black history to shoehorn in queer theory, you are clearly trying to use that for political purposes. Many disagree, including Black parents who told NBC News they are adjusting to the broader new policies in Florida by teaching their children Black history at home. The College Board admitted that its rollout of the course was flawed, but that the discourse around the course has been distorted. There is always debate about the content of a new AP course, the statement said. That is good and healthy. These courses matter. But the dialogue surrounding AP African American Studies has moved from healthy debate to misinformation. We are proud of this course, but we have made mistakes in the rollout that are being exploited. The mistake was that it did not express that the rollout was only, quote, the outline of the course, still to be populated by the scholarly articles, video lectures, and practice questions that we assemble and make available to all AP teachers in the summer for free and easy assignment to their students. This error triggered a conversation about erasing or eliminating Black thinkers. The teaching of issues like Black Lives Matter and reparations were among the topics Florida's Department of Education expressed concerns about. But the College Board said such contemporary events like the Black Lives Matter movement, reparations, and mass incarceration were optional topics in the pilot course. Our lack of clarity allowed the narrative to arise that political forces had downgraded the role of these contemporary movements and debates in the AP class. Throughout the controversy, the College Board said it had little contact with the Florida Department of Education about the course's content beyond, quote, transactional emails. Our response to their request that the College Board explain why we believe the course is not in violation of Florida laws, the statement said. We had no negotiations about the content of this course with Florida or any other state, nor did we receive any requests, suggestions, or feedback. The State Education Department did not respond to a request for comment. The next article comes from K-12 Dive. Seniority, performance most often weighed in teacher layoffs. Posted February 13, 2023 by Anna Merid. Dive Brief. Teaching positions could be on the chopping block as public schools face decreasing enrollment and September 2024 spending deadlines for federal pandemic relief funds and the resulting possibility of budget cuts. With this in mind, the National Council on Teacher Quality released a report Thursday analyzing teacher layoff policies among 148 of the nation's largest districts. The two most common factors districts use to determine teacher layoffs are based on seniority and performance, according to NCTQ. A third of districts said they primarily rely on a teacher's performance, with the educators having the lowest evaluation ratings being the first to face layoffs. Discussions about teacher layoffs are occurring while ongoing staffing shortages are still felt in some states and districts. On top of that, a recent report by Horace Mann Educators Corps revealed 63% of educators are considering leaving the profession. Subsection Dive Insight. While 33% of districts look primarily at performance when considering layoffs, nearly the same share, 31%, report using seniority, NCTQ found. Some 28% consider multiple criteria, including both seniority and performance. Though seniority policies remain some districts' top factor when determining which teachers to lay off, such strategies can disproportionately and negatively impact teachers of color, who are more likely to be early career educators, according to an April 2022 study published in the journal Education, Finance, and Policy. Seniority-based layoff policies could likely undo recent efforts to diversify the teacher workforce, the Education, Finance, and Policy study said. This approach can disproportionately impact students of color, too, the study found. One consequence of these sorting patterns is that LIFO, last in, first out, layoff policies end up removing less experienced teachers, sometimes en masse, from a small handful of schools, the study said. Further compounding these inequities, high-poverty districts that serve more students of color are more likely to have seniority-based layoff policies. To address these concerns, the study's authors suggest creating federal stabilization funds to help minimize position and budget cuts during economic pitfalls. States should also collect data on teacher layoffs and pass laws barring seniority-based layoffs in schools, the study recommends. As concerns about budget cuts loom due to declining enrollment, district school leaders may also have to begin considering if and how they should close or consolidate schools. Geographic location tied to falling enrollment is a common factor influencing such a decision, but school performance and student achievement can also play a role. And then our final article comes from BBC News, and it's titled Blue Jean, The Lesbian Teachers Who Inspired Film About Section 28. By Ian Youngs. BAFTA-nominated Blue Jean follows a lesbian PE teacher in the late 1980s, at the time when a controversial law banned, quote, the promotion of homosexuality in schools. Two women who inspired the film recall the impact of Section 28 on them. Coming face to face with a younger version of yourself must be a very strange experience, especially if that younger self is going through one of the most difficult periods of your life. That was how Catherine Lee felt as she watched a PE teacher in her 20s, her short blonde hair uncannily similar to her own, taking netball practice in a high school sports hall. It was just like the gym I used to teach in every day, Lee says. She experienced this surreal sort of time travel by visiting the set of Blue Jean, a new British film shot in Newcastle and set in the late 80s, which is partly inspired by her story and those of other gay teachers. And we'll have to cut that article short for time. We've run out of time for this episode of Education Today. Please be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kenny Park Yee for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Education Today is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.